we have a big group on the line today, or that is as long as there aren't too many people who are home with snow days. And so we've muted everyone on the call except for Paul and myself. My name is Stephanie, and I work at AHA Process, and Justin is also on here, and he's also from the Texas office of AHA. We want to welcome everyone. It's our hope that we're going to provide you with tips and strategies that you can implement into your daily activities with students. During the call, if you think of a question, please just email us at any time at questions@ahaprocess.com. So that's questions with an S on it, at ahaprocess, all one word, ahaprocess.com. And I will pose those to Paul when we get to our question and answer time. So for those of you who don't know our speaker today, Paul Slocum is from Perlin, Texas, and he's been a professional educator since 1966. He's been a teacher, a campus administrator, an instructional supervisor, curriculum director, deputy superintendent for curriculum and instruction, and has done adjunct teaching at the graduate level. Dr. Slocum currently is writing and consulting full-time for AHA Process, and he provides training on a range of topics, including helping boys be more successful in school, identifying gifted students from poverty, gifted education, and a framework for understanding poverty. If you'd like more information on what Paul is talking about today, he's available for consulting and workshops at your school, and his books are in the store on our website, which is www.ahaprocess.com. Okay, Paul, take it away.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, good morning, it's the middle of the day. And for all those people on the East Coast, I feel for you, because I was trapped in that last week. that was in West Virginia, though. But anyway, I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to speak with you. I'm going to try and focus this today on what we can really do in classrooms to really help boys be more successful. But kind of as a backdrop to that, I want to just go over some of my concerns and why it is becoming so critical. Boys today just are not achieving as well as girls are. And part of that, I think, is because we have, for the last 30, 35 years, I think we've done a lot to make schools more appropriate for females to compete in the workplace. Not that they have arrived by any stretch of the imagination, but it has certainly improved. 30 years ago, girls pretty much were channeled into typing courses, stenography courses, home economics, because after all, they were going to go out and be secretaries and go home and be mothers. And today, of course, that's not the case. And girls now are excelling at all levels. They are exceeding boys in college. And for boys who come out of poverty, it's even more staggering. For African-American females, you're looking at approximately 33% of those are pursuing professional degrees, while only like 17% of African-American males, and of that, only 9% are completing their coursework. So that's part of the disparity that's out there. For boys also who come out of poverty, it's just not cool to be smart. For a lot of really bright boys, even boys who are from poverty, boys who are from middle class, basically they dumb themselves down just to be cool because they don't want to be the nerd, they don't want to be the geek. And part of that is because boys are just shame phobic. Boys will do anything to avoid being teased. Girls typically are shame sensitive, but not necessarily shame phobic. However, I think that's also changing for girls. And but boys are just, it's just so important, that whole macho thing of really being cool. Add to that, that you have boys today who are growing up without fathers. We have over 2.1 million men in prison currently, to around 200,000 females. And those statistics are as of 2008. And unfortunately, what we end up with then are a lot of boys who grow up without fathers. They have no male role models in their families. And so if they don't have those, how do they learn how to grow up and be a man, let alone how to be a responsible young man? And certainly in large urban areas in poverty, that becomes even more critical. So that's part of the problem. And I'd like to shift from that into a little bit of the brain research on boys and how the male brain is configured differently than the female brain. Basically, boys love problem solving. They are highly competitive. And those become significant because what we have to do is to take those traits of males into the classroom and say, okay, how do we tap into that? If boys love problem solving, how do we incorporate that? If boys are spatial learners, boys typically, spatial orientation is their strength. For example, if you're going to do a step sheet, step one, step two, step three, if you turn that into a flow chart, boys are much more likely to engage in it. If you just write the words, just write the narratives, typically they disengage with it. Boys look at things like football plays on a chalkboard. Look at the number of men who use blueprints in their work. So you get into issues like that and you say, okay, then how do I work with that in a classroom? The weak area for boys is reading and writing. It just is. Boys developmentally lag behind females in reading and writing. Girls acquire language sometimes as much as a year and a half ahead of boys. And so that gap that you see between female facility with language and male facility with language, especially in those early years, is pretty intense. Add to that that we have added more reading and writing to our curriculum. You know, I can recall 25 years ago that kindergarten was nothing like it is today. Essentially, what you have today in kindergarten is what we used to do in first grade. So you have boys who are coming to school who are expected to engage in formal reading and writing by December of kindergarten. And for many boys, that is just developmentally too soon. One of the things that comes through on the research is that if you're going to have single gender classes, one of the best places to do that is at the primary grades. And it's because of that lag in reading and writing for boys down there in those early years. And it allows a teacher to do things that are much more boy-friendly, much more tactile, more manipulative, and therefore create an environment that's a little bit more conducive to boys acquiring those skills. When you have girls in the group, typically girls excel at reading and writing. Boys very quickly assume that reading and writing is a girl thing, not a guy thing. And what the research shows is that when boys struggle in reading and writing down there in those primary grades, then typically they form negative attitudes about reading and writing that never go away. And so being successful academically in those early years is really, really critical. And one of the things I really encourage schools to look at is how can they help boys down there in those early grades get that early start? Because if you can get the early start, it can delay some of the problems that begin to occur in upper elementary grades and definitely by middle school and high school. So are there ways in which you can have summer programs in which you can focus on boys? Is there a way to use even federal dollars to have a summer program for kids prior to going into kindergarten or prior to even going into pre-K? What can we do to accelerate some of that to give them truly a head start? I think summer programs for children who come out of kindergarten is something that school districts should employ. Boys are going from kindergarten to first grade, but who appear to be lagging a little bit behind, maybe not perhaps failing, but falling behind. What can we do in a summer program that might keep those wheels turning, might give boys a little bit more of a solid basis in which to do first grade work. So I think those are some of the things we need to begin to look at systematically and systemically to say, how can we begin to address these things? Another part of you're going to find with the male brain is basically what you have with boys is they do not process emotional information quickly. And part of that is because the corpus callosum, which connects the left and right hemispheres of the brain, are different sizes in males and females. The female corpus callosum is approximately 25% larger than it is in males. And what are the implications of that? Well, part of that with the corpus callosum is that it allows females to multitask. It does not make males a multitasker. Males tend to do one thing at a time. So when, as teachers, we give boys multiple things to do, I want you to do this, then this, then this, typically they get very frustrated with that, and they can't do it. If you have boys working on a task, you ask them, okay, put that aside, you can finish it later, I need for you now to open your books and turn to page 47. Boys typically will not let go. So that becomes problematic in a classroom. For the emotional part of the male, emotions are stored in the amygdala portion of the brain, which is the base of the brain, and yet they have to travel to the cerebral cortex for processing. So it has a longer distance to travel. In the female brain, emotions are part of every part of your brain. So when you have boys who get in trouble, typically you're going to ask, well, what were you thinking? Why did you do that? And he's going to go, I don't know. And he typically does not know. Males are very slow to process emotional information. So when you have boys who get in trouble, they have to have time out. They have to have time to process. And if you push them, all they do is shut down. And what makes that significant is when you push a boy, his default emotion is anger. And so he just gets angry. When you give a boy something he cannot do and he gets frustrated, the frustration triggers anger. And so boys a lot of times in school just feel set up. And a lot of that frustration and a lot of that anger are just skills he does not have, and yet he doesn't know he doesn't have them, or he can't put into words that he doesn't have them. And so what we then get is the anger and the frustration, and we tend to react to that. So that begins to create some problems. So one of the things that I really encourage educators to do for boys, especially those boys who are prone to act out their behaviors more and more, or boys who get very angry, who are very abrupt, try and have water available for those boys. If you have the water at room temperature, they don't have to go to the bathroom as quickly because cold water is processed through the body at a faster rate. What actually happens in the brain is when we get angry, when we get frustrated, typically cortisol, a stress hormone, is secreted in the brain. The brain is approximately 85% water. If you can get a boy to drink water, within 5 minutes, the water kicks in, dilutes the cortisol, and has a calming effect. So one of the things you want to do is try and have water readily available for those. When boys are in trouble, when they need processing information, try and encourage them to drink water. And so that's going to have a very different, it's going to help. It's going to help. The other time I encourage that is when boys are, well, even girls, when you're doing state competency testing, if you'll start a water drinking campaign a week or two before so that kids have an opportunity to hydrate their bodies, it will also lower test anxiety. And with young children, you can say, well, you know, it makes you smarter. Things flow through your brain faster. You know, you can do things of that sort. Older kids, just give them the facts. You know, it's going to help you think. It's going to keep you calm so you can process information. When we're angry, when we're frustrated, when we have high levels of anxiety, when we have high levels of stress, it's more difficult to think clearly. Water will help you think more clearly. And so just little things of that sort will also help. Another thing you will have with boys is boys do not hear certain sounds that girls do. I'm sure some of you out there can relate to that because you probably have spouses where you're always telling your husband to turn down the TV. Guys typically talk louder, and in order to hear, they have to have things louder than what girls have to have. Why is that significant in school? The things you want boys to hear you say. Make sure you're close to the boy, make sure you have the eye contact, and make sure they're hearing you. If you teach things, especially like phonics, make sure they're clearly hearing those sounds. Boys do not hear like girls do. So that becomes another consideration. So one of the things that I think becomes very important is that we begin to incorporate what we now know from neuroscience into the classroom. And I want to kind of, I got a couple of preliminary questions from some people out there, and I'd like to kind of speak to some of those and kind of hook that to what I'm talking about here today. One of the questions was from someone who works in a K-5 setting and working primarily with boys in grades 3 through 5 who typically are very, very unorganized. They appear to be unmotivated. And this was from a counselor, and he shared that they've tried all kinds of extrinsic motivation, but they just don't always work. And so what his question specifically is, are there any concrete tips or suggestions on how to get third and fifth grade boys organized so they can keep up and be responsible for things? And he mentioned that they had tried several things like code binders, color coding things, tabs, daily agendas, and so forth. And yet it doesn't seem to last. Well, I'd like to just kind of talk in general about that. Number one, boys like to solve problems. Spatial orientation is a strength for boys. Number one, I think one of the things that we typically do for students in general is we show them how to do things. We get organized for them. It's not about organizing things for the student. It's about getting the student to do the organization. So we need to turn it around. The teachers are doing the work, not the student. Why not give the boys the task? Come up with a way to organize this information. You create a system where that works for you or works for a group. Put them in a group. Have them work in pairs. Give them the problem to be solved. And the problem to be solved is, how do you keep up with homework assignments? How do you do this? Can you come up with a strategy that could help others? So put the monkey on their back. You might try things such as have them draw a map. Have them draw a map of where things are going to be in the room so you can locate them. Spatial orientation is a strength in the male brain. Can you draw a floor plan of your desk? Can you draw a floor plan of your locker or whatever it is, where it is you're storing things? So I think you have to begin to work with boys in that way to see how they can be more productive. Another overarching kind of thing is I think we have to begin to talk with boys about they are their brother's keeper. I think we have to somehow or another be as creative as we can to make academics a cool thing. And I think it needs to start with dads. I would really recommend that schools begin to do active recruitment of fathers, special meetings for dads, so that dads begin to embrace the importance of academics. Boys find it very, very important to please their fathers. And if the father is not in the picture, find a favorite uncle, find the minister of the church, find somebody that's in this boy's life, grandfather, whatever it is. But guys have to buy into that. I think typically what, and there's some research that supports this, what are the reasons why boys begin to associate school as a girl thing is mom is the one who's always at the school. Mom shows up at the PTA meeting. Mom is the ring mother. Mom is the one who does whatever volunteer stuff that needs to be done. Dads typically are not there. Dad shows up with the booster clubs, the sports booster things. And so what boys sense is sports are for boys. That's what dads are proud of. Moms do all the school stuff. And, yeah, it works down there and maybe in those lower grades, but as the boy gets up in the upper grades, he's got to associate school with also being a guy thing. Learning has to be a guy thing. So any way you can incorporate fathers, any way you can have fathers who really begin to understand the importance of them being, ask your son about his homework. Go to the school for the parent-teacher conference. Let your son know that you value academics. And so I think we have to begin to educate fathers about the importance of their role in this whole situation if we're really going to make some kind of progress. The other thing, I've got another question that really is dealing with kind of a behavior issue. And this is a school that has implemented single-gender classes. So let me just say a little bit about single-gender classes. Single-gender classes do work, and they can work. And it can help get rid of a lot of behavioral issues that come about in boy-girl classes, boys kind of letting the girls take over certain things, especially those things in language arts, because boys talk about literature differently than girls do. Boys write a little differently than girls do. So it can work. However, what the research shows, it requires two things. One, you must have parental buy-in, and you must have teacher buy-in. Absolutely critical. Secondly, you've got to have teachers who understand how the male brain works, and they have to have a boy-friendly classroom. Not all teachers are comfortable with that any more than all teachers are comfortable with working with all girls. So part of it is understanding how that works. The other part of it is when you put a group of boys together, particularly around adolescence, boys are highly competitive. And so basically what you have, you set up a dynamic where there can be a lot of competition between boys. And this particular question actually came from a school where they deal with a lot of urban children. And typically when you're working in an urban area, you're going to have a higher poverty rate. So now you've kind of got a double whammy. You have male issues to deal with, and you have poverty issues to deal with. Part of that is males are more aggressive. Put it with poverty, and you multiply that by about 10. You boys are going to be easily distracted. Put that with poverty, multiply that times 10. So the dynamic automatically increases. So I think when you get those things combined, one is class size becomes very critical. Obviously, 15 boys and managing that versus 25 boys are significantly different during adolescence. The other thing you have to have is I think you have to begin to educate boys about themselves. I think we have to begin to talk very openly with boys that they are killing one another. They are destroying one another. And that's not their job. You need to be your brother's keeper. You need to help take care of one another. And we need to begin to talk about what does that look like? Bullying one another is destroying one another. And so we have to talk about those behaviors. And I'll just share with you one way that one school did this, and maybe it's something you can piggyback on and come up with other ideas. I worked with an assistant principal who was working with some fourth grade boys who were highly at risk, and there were actually 26 of them. And what he did, he formed a club called BOB, Band of Brothers. And he met with these boys periodically, and they talked about what a band of brothers were. And he happened to key into the Knights of the Round Table. They read stories about the Knights of the Round Table, but they talked about a code of honor and what was trust, what was being trustworthy, what is loyalty about. And certainly loyalty in the context of being a knight is very different from loyalty to a gang, because it's around a sense of integrity and other kinds of issues. And so what the boys did, they actually developed their own code of honor, and they actually wrote a creed. And one of the challenges the assistant principal gave them was every morning when they got up to read that creed, oath, whatever you want to call that, which was pinned in their bedroom somewhere, read that before the first thing in the morning. Because what it's doing, you're pledging, this is what you're going to be, this is your character, had a dramatic impact on these young men. And he did other things like he took them out to dinner in small groups. They talked about table manners. They talked about how to treat girls. They talked about how to dress, the importance of manners. And so you have to begin to consciously work at those things. You have to develop a plan. I will tell you what will not work with boys. To lecture boys, to tell them, you can't do that, this is going to happen to you, all of those punitive measures. It may stop the behavior, and you certainly have to do that in order to have order, but it will not change the behavior. Just preaching the sermons will not change the behavior of boys. If anything, what they hear is the tone of your voice. They do not hear your words. So what they do, they react to the tone of the voice. So what does it do? It just makes it another hostile learning environment. They end up not respecting the teacher. They don't respect one another. And so the behaviors just continue to accelerate. So I think we've got to say, okay, let's pull back as a group of educators. Let's do some problem solving. If you've got bullying going on, if you have gang-related activity going on, if you have boys who are being really cruel to other boys, then a group of educators need to sit down and say, how do we begin to tackle this? How do we break this problem down into smaller bites so we can begin to address it? Who are the leaders in these groups? Is there some way we can begin to work with those leaders? I will tell you that coaches, shooting hoops with boys, all of those things are kind of bonding things. And is there a way in which you can get those people involved so you can begin to network with these boys and begin to pull that together? So all of those things become, I think, really, really important as you begin to work with boys. A couple of other things just from an instructional standpoint, when it comes to encouraging boys to engage in reading and writing, try to select some topics that are more boy-friendly. Boys like action. They typically will key into the gore and those kinds of stuff that might be a part of the story. So how can you incorporate that stuff? How can you incorporate adventure, action, excitement, and so forth into your curriculum? How can you incorporate things that allow boys to move? For example, some very simple ways that saw a teacher working with a group of boys, and one of the ways that he called on students to respond to a question is that he would say things like, okay, Johnny, what is XYZ? And he would toss the student a football. And the football, when he caught the football, then that was your cue to respond. I've seen teachers do things like boys typically during adolescence start, they love to wad up paper and throw it to the wastebasket. So how can you take that and make it work for you before a student can do something? He has to make it in the basket. If he doesn't, then he has to do something else. So how can you take that and make it into more of a game format where it's not a disciplinary issue, but rather it works for you in an instructional environment? So just some simple things like that can make a huge difference. So at this time, I'm going to kind of pause, give you an opportunity to share questions that you might have with Stephanie and Justin, and so let's take it from there, okay?
Okay, Paul, we've got a couple of questions. The first one is, are African-American males dropping out at a higher rate than other ethnic groups? And if yes, why do you believe that's happening, and what can we do to reverse it?
Well, yes, it is happening. Ruby Payne and I just finished a book on boys, poverty, and dropouts. And yes, African-American males are dropping out at a faster rate. The real statistics are these, that, one, boys in poverty are dropping out. That's the number one issue. The second issue is that there are a higher percent of children who are African-American in poverty than there are white. The actual number is white children. There are more white children in poverty than black, but there's a higher percentage in the African-American population. So when you put the poverty and you put the higher percent, therein lies the correlation. I think a big part of that is, and this is another thing that I ran across, and that is the prison rate of African-American men. It's pretty huge. They're the number one incarcerated group in our country, followed by white, followed by Latino. So that's another issue. So you have a lot of fathers absent in the home. Add to that that if you come out of poverty, the role of the male is very different than the role of the female. And males from poverty typically are not out there actively involved or embracing academics. So where are the role models for those young men? Which kind of says one of the things that we really, really have to do is bring in the role models for those kids. And that has to begin very, very early. And just keep at it and keep at it and keep at it. Where are the role models? How can you get some men to mentor young boys who don't have those role models in the school? It becomes very, very significant. And if you can start that early and those people stay with those young men over a course of time, it is even more dramatic with its impact. So I think that's another crucial, crucial part. I think certainly with having an African-American president, I think, is going to help, but certainly it's not going to solve the problem. So, but there has to be a role identity. Where are the outstanding African-American men in your community? And it doesn't have to be someone who's a dentist or a doctor or, you know, it could be somebody who is, look for someone's character, someone who does an honest day's work, gets an honest day's pay, is trying to be a good father, who's trying to be a good spouse. Find those people. Make them your role models. And how do you get them into the school to connect to these young men? And so I think we have to begin to look at those things.
Great. Paul, the next question is about dyslexia. And the writer says, since boys need to hear information in tones that are louder and in closer proximity than girls, do you see a direct correlation to dyslexia, which is typically a male-dominated learning diagnosis?
there probably is some correlation. I can't speak directly to that. I can tell you that I've had the opportunity to work with Dr. Bethany Tucker, and some of you may be familiar with her work on the Tucker Sonny strategies, who basically takes and incorporates a tactile approach to learning phonics. And I have seen her use that with young men who have been diagnosed as dyslexic. I had her personally work with a young man that I was working with who was diagnosed as severely dyslexic. And when I had her work with him, he was like 17. And I saw him be successful in reading activities that he had struggled with his entire life. And it was in a question of minutes that he was experiencing success. So you have to look for strategies, I think, for those young men that are a little different. And I've just seen the Tucker Sonny strategies work with those, because boys typically are highly figural. So if you can find some ways to do that, I think that would be helpful. Okay?
Wonderful. Let's see. The next one is from someone in a two-year college. The writer says, I have several young men who are from poverty areas, and they're not buying books or doing assignments or coming to school all the time. And what are some strategies you might suggest that would help them to be successful?
Well, coming from poverty, one of the things we have to do with boys, there needs to be some really good small group counseling or one-on-one counseling to help these boys be successful. They typically don't have the planning skills. They don't know how to study. They don't set aside time necessarily to study. They may be also holding part-time jobs. I have met boys who want to succeed in college, and yet they almost set themselves up for disaster. For example, they sign up for 4 or 5 classes. They are, you know, full speed ahead, and within 6 weeks, they're just overwhelmed. And at the same time, they have a part-time job. So, you know, how do you let them set more realistic goals? What does your work schedule look like? How much free time do you have for study? Then let's appropriate and take the appropriate number of courses that align with that. Don't set yourself up for disaster. In fact, the young man that I just alluded to about the dyslexia, that young man wanted more than anything else to go to college. And he, of course, just the dyslexia alone was a huge challenge for him. And so he wanted to go sign up for 9 college hours. And I talked to the young man and I said, you know, let's try one. Let's just do one thing and see it all the way through. And he did. He was able to do that. But he couldn't handle more than one course at a time and do it justice. So some of those issues may also be at play there. And you just have to help those young men. They don't have the skills. They may have the motivation, the desire, but they don't know how to do those other things like budget time. It's also knowing which courses are harder for you. If math, if passing college algebra is difficult for you, how do you set up more time for that? Maybe you don't take that course at the same time you're taking biology if that's also a very difficult course for you. So how do you begin to prioritize that? And so part of that, I think, is just a counseling thing, and to keep those young men in our colleges, I think we're going to have to get better at that and providing interventions. Working with kids from poverty is not like working with middle-class America who comes to college and they already have those skills. And yet, as a country, we need to be keeping those young men in those college courses. So how do we help them become successful? How do we begin to break it down, help them come up with those strategies, form a club, call it a help club or make it a study club? But how do we begin to provide a support system within the system that begins to help those young men become successful?
Well, and I imagine that the scheduling issue must be even more difficult if they're college athletes as well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that's another thing, because you're competing with the athletic part, and that's very physical. And so boys are going to show up for that practice and not necessarily the practice to do the writing assignment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got another question. This one says, my school district has written a grant for $1.2 million for a period of 3 years to help angry students, particularly boys. Do you think that a salaried social worker at the school would be the solution, or collectively teachers and administrative staff helping?
Oh, it takes a team. One person can't do it. One person cannot do it. You've got to make it a priority among staff. You've got to have, again, there has to be the support system. You have to have some, how you interact verbally with boys needs to be consistent. How do you create a school culture that's a little bit more boy-friendly and yet still keep order and maintain order? So, yeah, it's going to take a team effort. One person is not, a social worker in and of itself will not do the job. Social worker is important. You do have to begin to interface with families. Problems from the home come to the school. They just do. Anger at home kind of turns into anger at school. So we have to be concerned with the home environment at the same time, realize the school environment is the piece that we do control. And so how we interface with that, how we help boys cope with some of the things on the outside, all have to be a part of that problem.
And let's see, those are all the questions that I have at this point. So if you've got another nugget of information for us, that would be wonderful.
Okay. Well, I think obviously the problems are huge for boys out there. What I'm seeing more and more, and I think teachers out there probably agree, you are having more conflict at home. You're going to family structure is not like it used to be, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. But I think we have to begin to ask ourselves at school, with all the demands on academics, how do we begin to make school a little bit more enticing, a little bit more boy-friendly? We have taken so many things out of the curriculum that used to motivate boys. And, for example, the wood shop, the auto mechanics, the woodworking, they were just, school curriculum used to have all kinds of things. Of course, the school curriculum was also very divided. Here were the boy courses, here were the girl courses. Those days are gone. And yet, the content is there, the exams are there, and we certainly have to help these kids compete in an international marketplace. That's not going to change. It's only going to become more rigorous. So I think we have to begin to ask ourselves, how do we begin to make the school environment more appealing to kids, excelling academically more appealing to kids? And it can't just all be pencil and paper. So we've got to get boys physically involved in the school more. We have to appeal to their competitive side. How do we engage them more? How do we make contests sometimes can work? Having boys work in pairs tends to work better than small group work. Boys basically don't like small group work. If you put them in a small group, they'll spend half their time trying to figure out who's going to be the boss. So put them in pairs. If you put a boy with a girl, the girl has to do all the work. So that doesn't work, especially if reading and writing are involved. So put a boy with a boy and try and deal with those situations as well. Try to come up with ways that it can be keeping a score on a chalkboard. I think competition has been gotten a bad rap. Competition, healthy competition is a good thing. It's not necessarily bad, but I think we can talk about how do we win. I think we can talk about how do we lose gracefully. When we do something successful, what's an appropriate way to celebrate that? When we're not successful, what's an appropriate way to handle that? And with boys, you have to talk to them about what are you going to do when, long before that happens. And let me tell you why that's important with boys, versus more so than for girls. One, boys are slow to process emotional information. Two, boys have a harder time finding the words. Three, they tend to be more spatial, more figural than they are with words. Four, boys are competitive and they're problem solvers. So when you have boys who are very slow to process the information, and add to that that they're shame phobic, they don't want to be embarrassed, what tends to happen to boys, they are very prone and susceptible, very vulnerable to peer pressure. So if a boy is in a situation where somebody says, oh, come on, let's go do X. Oh, I can't do that. I'll get in trouble. Oh, who are you afraid of? Afraid of your mama? Afraid of Miss, oh man, what's his name? Yeah, that kind of stuff. That's the peer pressure thing. So what happens to the boy is he gives in. Why? He doesn't have a plan. Two, he's being embarrassed. He's being shamed. He may be called a sissy, a nerd, a fag, or whatever. And so he's pressured into that, and he goes along with the group. So because he's not quick to solve those problems, to come up with those solutions, boys, you have to talk to them about what are you going to do when, long before that happens. What are you going to do when you're encountered by a bully? What are you going to do when someone wants you to fight and you know it's against the school rule and that you're going to get suspended? How are you going to get out of it? And how are you still going to save face? That's a part of that problem solving, being proactive in situations. What are you going to do when a teacher accuses you of something and you don't feel like you did anything wrong? How are you going to respond to it? What would be appropriate? What would be inappropriate? Boys actually have to practice those words. They don't have those words. They don't have those strategies. And it's especially true for your boys from poverty, because how you solve the problem in the neighborhood is very different than the way you solve it in school. So what are you going to do when somebody calls your name? What are you going to do when? And a boy has to have a plan. He has to have a plan. And you can't wait until he's put in a situation, because then he can't think fast enough to come up with something. So what does he do? He reacts on an emotional level. Typically it's on a physical level. Then he gets in trouble. Then he further hates school. He hates the people that he thinks are being unfair to him. And so what it does, it just accelerates the problem. So you got to spend time with that. You got to talk about those things. And they're really, really critical with boys. Is it every boy in the school? Certainly not. But I think any teacher could look at a classroom and go, those three boys really need that. Those three boys, we need to work on that. So how do you pull them aside? How do you begin to work as a group? Is there a classroom activity that you can involve in by it? Is there a story that you could read and use it as a springboard to talk about some of those issues? Is there something in social studies, a battle or something, where you can take the essence of that conflict and bring it into a school so kids can make that connection? So I think there are a lot of ways to interweave it into the curriculum and use it as a springboard, have the classroom discussions, even do the task analysis of it, and draw some parallels. So I think those things become important as well. Are there any other questions out there?
There aren't any questions at this point. No, I haven't gotten any more.
Okay, well, let me just say, number one, I want to thank everyone for taking the time to be here, and I hope you've gotten a few insights. It is a complex issue. It's a growing concern in our country. I know it's a growing concern in schools. And we all have to get a little bit more creative in solving some of that. Some of the things that those of you, because you're familiar with AHA and his workshops, mental models become really important for boys because it is figural, especially drawing pictures, cartooning things. Those situations work well with boys. So try and really foster that. Boy behavior is a symptom, it's not a cause. Try and keep that in mind. So when you get acting out behaviors, try and find out the source of that. Try and label boys' feelings. Boys have a hard time with a feeling vocabulary. What I hear you saying is you're feeling very frustrated. What I hear you saying is you're feeling very angry because you think that's unfair. Ask those questions. Get into your adult voice and use that. What I hear you saying is, you know, you're afraid that you might not do well on that task, so it's easier just not to do it. So try and be proactive in that. Try and validate their feelings and put your focus on what's at the bottom of this. What are the feelings and the frustrations that are being acted out in school? If we just react to the behavior, we will continue to have more boys in alternative programs. And what we want to do is keep them in the classroom and help them become more successful.
Wonderful.
For being here.
Well, thank you so much, Paul, for being here with us and giving us such great information. If anybody has any questions that they think of, please go ahead and you can still email us, and I will forward those to Paul. And although he's getting ready to hop on a plane, he said that he would be happy to answer those questions this evening or tomorrow.
Not in a hotel room.
Right. Thank you.
Point out it's to go.
Yes.
I'd be happy to do that.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you, Justin. And thank you, everyone who's been listening.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.